Okay, let's have satsang. Anybody have any questions? Anything on your mind? How and why did the manifestation come into being? The manifestation of the creation. See, that's a nice question. It has a nice answer. That's a nice question with a nice answer. First thing to realize is that, in order to answer this, is that Brahman, just conscious being, is non-dual. Just from its own standpoint, absolutely non-dual. That means it has no parts, there's no time and space, there's no objectivity, there's no hands and legs, there's no brain, there's no mind, there's just pure, there's no knowership, there's no subject-object relationship. There is just me, pure, conscious being. When I'm sitting in contemplation and just recognizing, I say gently, focus on yourself, then just be yourself. That being is whole and complete in and of itself. And it doesn't require a knower or another pramana to come in and illumine it, because it is the consciousness itself. So Brahman is being non-dual and therefore non-objectifiable, is not subject to time, not subject to space, right? Not subject to time and space. So we say Brahman is timeless. So from the standpoint of Brahman, there is no Brahman is not a creator or somebody who has brought about Maya, or has even said, let Maya now come into being in some sort of a magical way, you know? Let Maya now come into being, and the whole Maya comes into being, the whole creation is manifest. So there's no one there to create. There's no creator. Brahman is not a creator. Brahman's not a seer or a knower. Is not subject to any type of duality whatsoever. So Brahman will have nothing at all to do with the manifestation of Maya in terms of any type of activity or actor, being an actor involved in that, a creator. And then Maya itself can't be created, because who is going to create it? That's why they say Maya is beginningless, because it's not going to create itself. If it creates itself, how is it going to create itself, and out of what? And also, when we analyze Maya, which means when we analyze everything that exists, just generically, all things that exist within time and space and that come into being and go out of being, they're devoid of any essential being in their own right. They need to borrow being, right, because they're bordered by non-existence. So they not only can't create, Maya can't create itself, it has no being or substance, it's mitya. So that means that it's dependent for its being on something else, and that something else is only non-dual being, which is Brahman. There is no other thing. It has no thingness itself, and its being mitya is dependent on the one thing that is there, which is Brahman, which is being. And so Brahman, mitya, is there to be experienced, but it hasn't created it. It hasn't created itself. It simply is. That's why we say that Maya is beginningless. Because who's going to create it? Brahman's not going to create it. It's not going to create itself. There can't be any third thing, because Maya, within Maya, is included all of duality, time and space itself, on every level. As long as there's objectification, that's what we call Maya, everything that exists in time and space. So it can't have it can't create itself, it can't have a beginning, and it has no being with which to have a beginning. And the only being that it can enjoy is Brahman, and Brahman is non-dual, so it can't create it. So the why did the manifestation come into being there is no reason. There's no reason because Brahman is non-dual, and so it isn't thinking. You know, for there to be a reason, oh, let me bring Maya into being. There's no thought there. Brahman doesn't have a thought like that. Brahman's non-dual. And so that means that this Maya, which has no independent being of its own, its being is only Brahman, also it can think, oh, let me manifest now, but that would be difficult because it would be saying that from the deep sleep state. And in the deep sleep state, that duality is not functioning. It would just be, imagine you in the deep sleep. You say, oh, I think, oh, let's wake up now. Let's wake up now. There's nobody there to say, let's wake up now. From the deep sleep state into the waking. You're already awake when you're saying, let's wake up now. See, it's too late. Once you say, let's wake up, you're already awake to even be able to say that. And so now we get into talking about just what is the nature of Maya? That Maya has its being in Brahman, so it is natural to Brahman because there's no place else to put it. But being Maya doesn't bring about any change to Brahman. That's why we say Brahman is Vivarta Upadana Karana. And itself doesn't have any being to be creating anything. It's like the shadow trying to, you know, who created the shadow? The shadow didn't create the shadow. The person didn't create the shadow either. The shadow is just a phenomenon. You see what I mean? It's not created. So then even the how question, how did it come into being? There is no first coming into being to say how. If you want to get into how, we have to look at only from the standpoint of Maya already being there and being sattva, rajas, and tamas, and how the Maya manifests. First the sattva and rajas manifest for the Hiranyagarbha, the subtle body, and then the sattva, rajas, and tamas, then the tamas of the five subtle elements go through Panchikarana and become the physical world. But that's really kind of mechanical about how, what's going on in the creation itself. So that's also probably not a very satisfactory answer. So what this boils down to is it's not once you go beyond time and space, then these words like how and why have no place. So it's not like the question is being avoided. It's that is actually the answer. It's not an avoidance of the question. It's the truth of the situation. Like if you ask, like say if I just say, well, because Brahman is free from time, there is no becoming, right? The answer to how and why is that question can't be asked when you're into the realm of non-duality where there's no becoming. That question is not applicable anymore just because you're beyond time and space. Just like cause and effect. You know, what's the cause, what's the effect? These things are not applicable. We can't even say that Brahman is the cause of the creation because Brahman doesn't do anything to become the creation. That means the creation, the Maya itself, is just beginningless. So we're just dealing with realities, Brahman being timeless, Maya being beginningless. And so the question of how or why is negated. Everybody see? It's good to think about this because we're not used to it. We're only used to having cause and effect and reasons because we exist within time and space and actually a beginningless cause-effect sequence, which we can never get to the bottom of. It says I forget what you call it, I'll tell you in a minute. We can never get to the end of it or the beginning of it. But still, within our little sphere of reality, we can say this caused that and this caused that. But those questions don't apply to Brahman. Because of the nature of Brahman. Infinite regress is what I was thinking of. So Jagadish says, Yes, so true, but the mind likes to ask questions. Absolutely. And it should ask questions, but the questions that it asks need to be answered. That's why I say these are good questions. They're important questions because they're questions that take you out of the container, the time-space container, and the mind has to be able to jump out of that time-space container in order to understand Brahman, in order for those questions to be able to be answered. It's just the questions are answered in a way that you wouldn't expect, but the questions need to be answered. Why shouldn't they be answered? If punya, papa, merit are not applicable beyond time and space, how do values operate? Values all operate within time and space. That's why Nachiketas, we haven't gotten there yet. I think in the, you know, in the, I think the next class probably, actually, Nachiketas gets to ask one of his major questions, and one of them has to do, is there anything that's free of dharma, adharma? So dharma, adharma, punya, papa are intrinsic, you know, they're intrinsic to Ishvara, but they're all within duality. For Brahman there is no dharma, adharma at all. So the person, the moksha, the need for liberate bondage and liberation, moksha, punya, papa, all of these things, sukha, dukkha, all of these things exist within duality. And then the question is there anything about me that is free of all of this? You know? And that is Brahman. Your nature is free of punya and papa, dharma, adharma, you know, birth and death, pleasure and pain. All of the opposites exist within time and space. So, as a follow-up, Laura says, so you realize the freedom, then the conduct comes informed by that. The thing is, the freedom of your own being is already everything that you seek. If you start analyzing yourself, even as an individual, and analyzing adharma, the reasons for adharma, it all comes out of a lack of fullness, a lack of completeness. When you're happy, you're hard to be a dharmic. Rob says, like pot is clay, is it correct that my body is Brahman, my mind is Brahman, you are Brahman, the tree is Brahman, etc.? Yes, so far so good, that's correct. Is it correct then that Brahman is simultaneously manifesting as each of us simultaneously? Okay, now. The good question. When we understand satya mitya, it's true one way and not true the other. Like I can say the pot is clay, but the clay is free of the pot. From the standpoint of clay, there is no pot. But from the standpoint of pot, it is nothing but clay, right? But from the standpoint of clay, where's the pot? There's only clay. So from the standpoint of my body, my sense of self that the body has, that is Brahman. The self that my mind has, that is Brahman. The self the tree has, that is Brahman. But from the standpoint of Brahman, there's only Brahman. So when you say that Brahman is simultaneously manifesting as each of us simultaneously, the wording there is difficult. You don't want to say that Brahman is manifesting because Brahman never goes through any type of change at all. Right? So, because Brahman is non-dual, it doesn't have any parts, Brahman never becomes the creation. Maya does all of the becoming, but Maya has no being apart from Maya does not have its own being. It totally borrows its being as though from Brahman. Like the pot has no being. If I were to take the clay out of the pot, there is no pot. So if I was to take Brahman out of the manifest creation or out of any individual or any nama rupa, there would be no nama rupa. There would be no name and form. So if you pull Brahman out of the creation, there is no creation. In that example, we use rope, snake. If I pull the rope away from the snake, there is no snake. There's really only rope there. The rope is what we call the adhishtana of the snake, means it is what the snake totally 100% depends upon for its being. It is really the truth of the snake, and Brahman is the truth of this creation. And so this creation, this body, mind, sense organs, that is my body, my mind, my sense organs, my emotions, blah, 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 all of these things are my. They're mine. I say they're mine because I, as Brahman, I am their self. So the sense of me that I have is not something that's given to me at all by the nama rupa, by the body, by the mind, by the sense organ, by the moods, by the emotions, by the memories, by my intelligence, by my brain. None of these things have anything to do with the me, the sense of me as me, this conscious being. The conscious being, the me experience, not as an objectified experience, but just me being me, that is Brahman. And so this me is taken to be one with this physical body, as though, well, this body is what is giving me this sense of me. But it's not. What's giving me the sense of me is myself, which is Brahman, not the body. The body has no being, really. It comes into being and goes out of being. It's continually changing. So the isness that it enjoys doesn't belong to it per se. It belongs to the self. Like I could say, the clay that the pot is enjoying doesn't really belong to the pot per se, right? It belongs to the clay itself. The pot has no being other than the clay. In fact, there's only clay there. Does that make sense, Rob? Jagadisha says, Swamiji said that it is inevitable that we all are destined for moksha. Are you able to elaborate to this on this? Well, he would say something like that, even though infinite minus one is still infinite. So in a way, that type of thinking kind of negates that, just because infinite minus one is still infinite. But just from here, from our situation here, this is like a... Everyone is seeking the same thing. All beings are seeking the same thing. They're seeking themselves. They're seeking the wholeness of their own being. And they're seeking, as they go on trying to find that in the creation, you know, they go on working on it, trying to see if this, let me have this, let me have this, let me have any combination of things. They try dharma, they try adharma, you know. They try so many things in order to find their way back home to themselves, actually. Not that they've never been home, they are the home, okay. As long as that ignorance is there, the ignorance is beginningless. So it's not like from the standpoint of the jiva, they've ever been home, but they are that home. They are the home. Oh, hell yeah, I see your message. It's fine. I was just curious. They are that home. So they're trying to get back to themselves, okay, which is themselves. And so you go on experimenting, and Swamiji will say you go on assimilating, slowly but surely assimilating your experience. And one of the major assimilations that really makes a mumukshu out of you is that viveka. As you go on assimilating your experience, you have the initial viveka that everything within time and space is time bound, and therefore can only give temporary experiences. So I can never find any lasting well-being out of the creation. That's a huge understanding. And that understanding leads to vairagya, means this creation and all of the things I've been seeking really are not able to give me what I'm looking for. And at that time, I become a mumukshu. And so my path is to the mumukshutvam, is to gain that mumukshutvam, the path of all beings, is to figure that out. And since it's logical and you can figure it out, they will figure it out. Each person will figure it out. And when they become a mumukshu, then it's Bhagavan's promise that when you're a mumukshu, then you will attract the pramana that you need to solve this problem. But before you can attract the pramana that you need to solve the problem, you have to recognize what the problem is. Otherwise, you will believe that there's some other way to solve this problem. If only I could have this, or maybe if I could do that, or maybe if I could astral travel, or maybe if I could have sit in meditation all of the time, or whatever it happens to be. All of those things, you're still stuck within time and space. And so there's no resolution because of that. So that is the major, major discovery. That particular truth is the major discovery that gives you the viveka, the vairagya. You know, the viveka and vairagya are major discoveries. It gives you the mumukshutvam. And that, and then that solves the problem. That gives the mumukshutvam, solves the problem. The universe takes over from that point, from that point on, as the Shastra tells us, and is all of our experience, actually. Once a person's a mumukshu, this is what happens to you. But you have to be a real mumukshu. You can't say, I'm really a mumukshu. If I just have to astral travel and everything will be fine. Well, that's not the mumukshu they're talking about. You'll get to astral travel, though, because that's what you've set your mind on, you know. Say you want to get to Swargaloka, that's your whole, everything that you want. The thing that you desire the most is Swargaloka. It might take you a few lifetimes to get there, because it's very, very rigorous, demanding. But you can get there. And mumukshu means that was when you recognize that even Swargaloka or astral traveling or any amount of possessions or lack of them, any amount of meditative experiences or lack of them is not going to help, because you are still existing within time. As long as the ahankara is attached to anything within time, you're subject to change. Any condition that exists within time is subject to change. And so then your moksha will be time-bound. That's a good question. Sue says, can a jnani act adharmically? Well, I'm going to answer this. I'm not trying to be tongue-in-cheek, but this is the thing. The jnani, you ask the jnani who they are, they say, I'm Brahman. And that what that means is that the aham, the I, that is your identity, is with yourself. For Brahman, there is no dharma or adharma because there's no action, right? So from the standpoint of the self, there is no acting, and so there is no acting dharmically or adharmically. So in that respect, all beings are free from dharma and adharma from the standpoint of the self. The jnani is identified with the self instead of with the body, mind, sense organs, and so the jnani can say, for me, there is no dharma and adharma. So, now, you ask the jnani that question and you're talking about from the standpoint of their upadhi, like their body, mind, sense organs, you know, they can act adharmically and they can feel guilt and they can do the wrong, make wrong choices. That's very possible. But they don't have, even though that certainly can happen, they don't have the same pressure. They don't suffer from the same pressure to become happy from the creation, you know. Like, I need this to be happy, and sometimes I will skirt around Dharma in order to get my way so that I could be happy. You see what I mean? So that type of motivation, what usually causes a person to, what is more natural for a jnani is just to behave dharmically, because they're not pressured by having to be to gain happiness from the world. Nevertheless, you know, you can make mistakes and do things that in hindsight you say was a mistake, and I regret that. That was a mistake. I was foolish. I heard Swamiji say that about himself sometimes. He said that was really silly. I was silly. He was being silly. But he would never say that even if he did something unwittingly and it was really not the appropriate or whatever, there would never have been an intent to hurt. So that type of, for him, I would say what was absolute was the ahimsa. And then you make mistakes here and there. You see what I mean? I think understanding as a person matures, the commitment to ahimsa becomes really, really strong. But that doesn't mean that all of your actions are perfect all the time. And you can unwittingly hurt somebody also, even though it's the last thing you would have wanted to do. So dharma for them is the natural behavior, but that doesn't mean that they're always, you know, can't make mistakes. I think it's not unwittingly doing something that causes problems. It's just, the example I like for that is like, if you unwittingly put your hand in fire, not knowing that it will burn you, you will get burnt. Even though you are innocent, you'll still get burnt. And dharma and adharma are like that. They're laws. And your own conscience tells you. You feel guilt or badly. Rob says, in the clay pot example, the amount of clay is the same as the amount of clay in the pot. If I am Brahman, you are Brahman, each of us is Brahman, it would be as though the same clay were simultaneously pot, cup, plate, etc. Is that where the analogy is not applicable? Well, it is and isn't. It's, the thing is, when we, in our, within time and space, like, we would have this piece of clay and piece of clay that's a pot, this piece of clay that's a plate, another piece of clay that's a plate or whatever, okay? So they would be different pieces of clay within time and space, and we say all of these are nothing but clay, but there's also space in between and all of that. And also, in the clay pot example, clay is actually being molded into the shape of a pot, right? And then you could say that pot is now being molded into the shape of a cup. So the clay is actually moving, even though it doesn't change its clayness. It's still changing its form. And Brahman being non-dual, one without a second, it has no second thing, means within itself it has no parts and there is no other thing either. Right, so you would say, in terms of species, there's only one species, Brahman. And that species that we call Brahman has only one member, which is Brahman. And that one member has no parts. You see what I mean? So that's what we mean by non-dual. So there's no way of any type of movement or becoming or morphing into the, like one homogeneous Brahman morphing into the creation. Because there's no parts to do any type of morphing and there's no second thing. So Brahman is non-objectifiable. It just is pure conscious being. So it's not becoming anything. And so But Maya is. Maya is manifesting as the creation and resolving and going through all types of modifications. But Maya, when we analyze it, Maya has no being. So the change, Brahman is the changeless being which the changing Maya enjoys, has for its being. So Brahman has no becoming. So when you say in the clay pot example, the amount of clay is the same as the amount of clay in the pot. If I am Brahman, you are Brahman, each of us is Brahman, it would be as though the same clay were simultaneously pot, cup, plate, etc. It is the same one non-dual Brahman is simultaneously the self of all beings within Maya. But it's not becoming those beings. It is the one non-dual being which the whole creation enjoys. So I think it helps here to go to the dream example, or that you dream or imaginations. But say you have a dream. Every character in the dream, all of the grass, the rocks, the trees, the sky, the sun, the clouds, every single thing in the dream enjoys one non-dual Brahman simultaneously. Because Brahman is the being from which that whole creation comes. See what I mean? So everything enjoys it equally. But Brahman isn't doing any act of becoming. You in the dream, yourself is not becoming the dream. It's that the dream has you as its adhishtana, as its being. Right? The same is true with your imagination. Like if you imagine yourself walking through a beautiful meadow with your friends, and say there's animals and birds and the sun is shining. You know, that whole imagination enjoys you as its being. And so every character, every blade of grass has its being, you are its being. It has no being of its own. If you go, even in this creation, if you go to analyze the creation, you can't find anything here. Everything goes into an infinite regress of division. You can't find a thing here. You can only find smaller and smaller parts. But that goes on to an infinite regress that never has any solution. And also everything that you experience comes into being and goes out of being. So it's bordered by non-existence, so you can't establish any type of being here in the creation. But there's nothing but being. Everything is equally. You can't have an experience away from being, and no experience enjoys more being than another experience. Like, for instance, you perceive this world through your sense organs, and the world has being, but you experience an imagination in your mind, that imagination also has being. You have a dream, that also has being. There is no experience possible that doesn't enjoy being, because being is Brahman. It's the adhishtana, the substance of all things. And it's not big or small, because it's non-dual, it's free of time and space. So nothing can be there apart from it. To be there apart from that would be to have non-being. And then that can't be. So Rob says, I am the entirety of Brahman. You are, yes, absolutely, that's right. Brahman is non-dual. You are Brahman completely, not partially. You are Brahman. There, you can't divide Brahman. That's a really important realization, Rob. That's super. Yeah, that is critical understanding. Because people think that they're just experiencing a little part of Brahman. That means that you are taking yourself to be your mind. And Brahman is not big or small. It's non-dual. That's really good. Okay, I'm leaving. I'll see you all on Thursday. Good night.